and welcome again to Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. And drinks, when not ill. When your wife is not here, forgetting the names of Primarchs that she should clearly know the names of.
See, I even told her the comeback. I'm just like, listen, I was listening to it on Monday, and I'm just like, listen, I'm sick. But even I can say the comeback is, but Lang, I'm not a Space Wolf player. Why the fuck do I care who their Primarch is?
She has a Space Wolf army. That was the whole point of the attack.
That's true.
I'm like, because I was just, anyways. Oh, silliness. I know, right? So, this is Jaded Gamercast. We're drinking. We're talking about games. Let's get into Higher Learning. Higher Learning for this week is going to be just a bit of tactica with regards to reserves in Warhammer 40,000. Now, Nathan, I don't play very much with reserves. I don't have armies that use reserves specifically, so unless the scenario forces me to use reserves, I really don't see the tactical point of reserves. I know that you have a very different side of things. You've kind of mentioned it before with regards to your Tyranids, so it's kind of like I look at the armies that I have, the armies that I play or have played, and I'm always just kind of like, yeah, but I just, you know, you kind of need everything on the table for Warhammer 40,000, you know? You need the shooting, you need to, you know, or they're soaking up fire, or you know, from turn one, you want to be able to have these things on the table as opposed to kind of waiting for them to show up. So I've always kind of looked at reserves as being very kind of close combat specific, or, you know, ultra vital late game specific type stuff.
I think you're actually with the majority of people, and that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it, because obviously my Tyranids are very different. My Tyranids are built to be a second-term reserves list. You know, I will never deploy with anything on the board. That's just the way the army, you know, is built and designed to play.
Right.
But I really think that reserves in 5th edition is probably one of the least used additions to the game. Period, you know, because I mean, everyone runs, everyone outflanks now. If your unit had infiltrated, now just outflanks. I actually can't remember the last time I saw a unit actually infiltrate.
Right.
That's the thing. It's just like, I really think that strategic use of that reserves rule, the fact that you can voluntarily hold anything in, is brilliant, and it's completely underused now. A few caveats about this, you know, and this is where the Higher Learning comes in. If you do not have a reserve-based list, as in something that is going to modify your reserve rolls, whether that be Descent of Angels giving you rerolls, Tyranids giving you plus one, Guard giving you plus one, whatever it be, don't reserve your whole army, okay? Because all you're doing at that point is saying, I'm going to come out piecemeal to my full-strength opponent, and I'm going to let him fucking blast me in pieces, okay? You're giving him a free win at that point.
Right.
What I really think strategic reserves is good for is when you're going second. So if you're lined up across from a leaf blower or any army that you know has the guns to fucking murder you, rather than giving him the shooting phase, why not hold some key stuff in reserve? The problem with this that I've typically found with most people is whether or not you can do this is in the list building phase. If you play a static gun line, you can't reserve because you're going to walk on turn two plus. You're not going to be able to shoot the turn you come on. You know, it's things like that. So, I mean, to me, the smart use of reserves ties into that whole Higher Learning we did on movement in 40K.
Right.
If you have an army that can move around the board, if you have an army that is not handicapped by its mobility, then you absolutely should be looking at it saying, when is reserves beneficial to me? Because if you can be in position the turn you come in, then why stand there and get shot?
Okay, and I see where you're going with that, and yeah, I mean, it makes sense if you are looking at reserves in terms of, like, list building, but I think that that's kind of where the reserves rules for 5th edition kind of get a little bit flat, is the idea that for them to really be effective, where you really feel like, yeah, this is a good move, this is something I'm really going to want to do, and I mean, like you said, with infiltrators, it's the same thing, because you don't see anyone infiltrate anymore, except for, like, stealth suits. So, I mean, it's like, how many people are going to be building lists, especially guard. You know, you bring up guard where you do have something that's going to allow you to modify your roles. And I do agree that taking an army where everything is in reserve is kind of a great way to always, like you say, kind of like deny shooting, but it's almost like almost always guaranteeing yourself first turn. Mm-hmm. Or always guaranteeing yourself a game where you're denying him first turn. Like he has, oh, it's your mm-hmm. turn? Okay, well, you got nothing to shoot at. My turn. Yeah. You've used that a lot.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, that is the competitive tournament build that I bring my Tyranids to. Because in my experience of years of playing 5th edition, I've never met someone that wins the dice roll and opts to go second.
Right.
Ever. Like, you know, it's just like I'm the guy because I have that turn two reserves list. So it's just like everyone's trying to go first if they win the game, you know, win the dice roll. And if I win the dice roll, I'm electing to go second. So by building my list to be an all reserves list that it goes for, you know, goes second, I do deny him two full turns of shooting. And it means that no matter what happens, I'm always playing the game that I want to play. You know, no right. one is kind of screwing me because, you know, if I have, you know, your cookie cutter leaf blower for Ardboys that is today, and that is the end of all mentions of Ardboys for this podcast. So if you're hoping for coverage, go listen to someone else. But you know, so it's just like, you know, it's if I like I always get to play the game that I want by going second with an all reserve list. But really what I'm talking about is when you do run into the armies that just have too much firepower to deal with. Because even with your orcs, I mean, why not reserve your knobs? Like if you know, because they're riding in your truck, right? You know, so it's just like, holy shit, he's got so many auto cannons that he's absolutely going to pop it. And then he's got rockets and he's going to instant kill most of my knobs. He's going first. You know what? I'm going to fucking reserve it because I know that I can shoot it on 25 inches because of my red paint job.
Yep.
The turn they come out. And then even if it gets destroyed, I have a good chance of ramshackling in their face anyway. So you're just like, fuck it. Why not? And that's really what I think that a lot of people are missing in their games of 40K to really bring it up to the next level is this idea of not everything has to sit on the board. Not everything has to, you know, go to ground for cover saves. And that'd be another good one to talk about because most people don't go to ground because they're just like, fuck, but then I can't shoot.
Right.
But you know, so it's just like, you do not have to fit in this 4th edition box of my entire army is going to stand here, let you shoot it. Whatever survives is then going to shoot you and so on and so forth. Because I find that with the changes to 5th edition, where points costs have gone down on everything, you get more guys, you get more heavy weapons. You know, armies like the Leaf Blower can exist where it's literally, you know what? I've got so many big guns and templates and all of this that, I'm going to hit you so hard on the first turn with you standing there, you know, rocking out with your cock out that you simply can't beat me afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole premise of the list. And lots of armies can do it now. You know, I mean, fuck, Bell of Lost Souls just, you know, started talking about Alpha Strike, where it's just like, no, you just build an Alpha Strike list. You can't lose.
Mm.
You know, and that's why I think that, you know, should you run into that Alpha Strike list, smart reserve elements is what is going to win it for you. Because even if you don't have deep strikers like Terminators or outflankers or things like that, if you built a list with mobility in it in mind, then you are able to deploy some elements in cover, go to ground if you have to, or, you know, just ride out the shooting. But then you can still threaten late in the game using your mobility, and it's still at full strength.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's really, like, what I want to tell people is don't be afraid to reserve. And if you look at your list and say, I can't reserve anything because I'm missing X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. my response to that is rethink your list.
Yeah.
Build in mobility.
Well, I mean, I do see that side of it. And yeah, even you bringing up kind of the bit about the knobs does make me kind of look at my orc list and kind of think maybe how I would play it differently in the future. Because even Death Copters as reserves wouldn't be a bad idea.
They have scout. They can outflank at that point, which means now they're threatening on the sides.
Right, exactly. You know, so it's like it's actually some very interesting abilities that you can toss in there, especially when you're talking about a horde army where your goal is to try to get him to waste as much of his firepower on your horde units as possible.
Well, exactly. Your 30 shooter boys are ruthless.
Right, exactly, right? Nobody shoots at them ever. I mean, it's hilarious when I get them up close and it's ridiculous amounts of shooting. It's hilarious, but nobody ever shoots at them. You know, same thing with my Slugga boys. But, you know, I tend to put the Big Mech in between the two units. So, yeah, they've got a 5-plus cover save on top of it. So people just kind of tend to ignore them until, you know, they kind of get into rapid fire range. They try to chew them up as quick as possible, which always tends to fail. But, no, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I would have to look at my list again and kind of think about it. I think that certain armies, like you say, are going to come out on top with that, especially Tyranids. Guard, not so much. I think it really kind of depends on how you're playing your guard. Guard is kind of more for, like you say, going to ground, like the units that should be going to ground. You know, the units that you really don't want to get targeted right off the, you know, like right off at the beginning of the list should be in your reserves, you know?
Well, and the thing with guard that I really like and what makes them interesting is they have orders that if you go to ground, you can stand them back up and still shoot. I mean, you can't make use of other orders, but the fact that you get your plus one to your cover save,
right,
and then you still get a shooting phase in the next turn is fucking boss, to be honest. Like, it's fantastic. And guard also have a lot of units that have, you know, not weird deployment, but they have scouts and they have infiltrators, they have deep strikers, and I really think that that's where guard armies would excel at keeping stuff into reserve is outflanking whatever Hellhound variant has the Melta guns, because now you're able to come out on a flank early because you can bolster your reserve rolls, burn 12 and still fire off like a Melta cannon kind of shot, which is again it's one of those things that even the psychology of reserves on your opponent always makes them wonder. Because if you're just like, hey, my Melta tanks are going to reserve, well, now they're going to put their fucking Land Raider right dead center in the board. So, I mean, that alone is helping play into your strengths, because you know he doesn't want that to come on a board edge and shoot him in the face with Melta. So you're creating fire lanes. So I really think that Guard can make use of it. They've got a lot of fun options because you've got outflanking Sentinels, you've got deep striking Stormtroopers. Of course, no one takes Stormtroopers because they're too expensive, but, you know, they exist.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And they are in your book, you mate.
Well, I always have to laugh about Stormtroopers because they're, and this kind of goes into the topic that we figured we'd talk about for the show. It is a little bit more of just a goof around kind of topic, but Stormtroopers are a perfect example. They're so great in the fluff.
Yes.
They're so good in the fluff. They're phenomenal, awesome, like cream of the crop type units in the fluff. And then you actually get them on the table and it's just like, oh God, this is a terrible choice. Especially back when fucking hell guns were just like, what were hell guns? Last guns with AP5?
Ooh. You know it.
Oh, I've got a higher ballistic skill. It was just, you know, it was one of those times when the rules just did not match up with the fluff.
I was just going to say that if you've ever read Eisenhorn,
yeah,
the way he writes the fucking like Kasserkin, you know, elite Cadian stormtroopers in the, you know, in the one bidding on Cadia in book three is so amazing. Like, you're just watching it's like, oh my God, am I erect from this? Like, this is, I swear this never happened.
Well, like, they're essentially immune to psychology. They're stubborn. They've got high leadership, like, super, super awesome maintained. And, of course, like, the hell guns just ripping through people. It's like the hot shot round that Larkin has, you know? It's just like, for the longest time, even now, it's just like, Imperial Guard snipers, eh?
You know,
but it's just like, oh, but Larkin. And it was funny because there was a time with the Imperial Guard, if we kind of stick with the Imperial Guard, because I do think that they're one of the best examples of this, where the fluff is so good. It's all so good. But the actual rules that go along with the army is kind of like, no, all that stuff sucks. You want that tank. That's about it. And like, that's kind of where you fall into line. And for the longest time, they did try to bring that awesome storyline into it, where they had like the special characters for Schaefer and the ghosts and like the commissars and all that kind of stuff, where you could bring them into your list and really have some cool times with them. But now they've kind of like bled that off into like this really watered down version of just like, oh, no, you can have special characters. They do this one thing.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, ah, like... yeah, Captain Al-Rahim, oh, and then when they wrote this, and the Talarans in this book were, you know, the freaking Commissar Kane book, the Talarans were really cool because they're, like, super devout, and there's all this other stuff that they had going for them, and it was just like, all right, yeah, fuck yeah, Talarans, you know? And then the Commissar Kane books, he's attached to the Valhallan legions, and they had all the Valhallans, and they were really cool, and they had all this extra stuff. And really, when it comes down to the rules, all of these different legions amount to, like, or these different plans kind of amount to like one extra special rule, or they kind of amount to like, oh, but you can play Catachans, you know?
Yeah.
It's no, just, and, it's all kind of, it all just gets so watered down in the rules that you pick up that book for the fluff, you start reading the rules, and you just lose all of your drive to play that army.
So you're saying that Robin Credace was able to take all of the flavor out of an army? That's
isn't about your Tyranids, Nathan.
This is always about my Tyranids. This entire topic is about my Tyranids, but we'll get to them later. You're absolutely right, because when you look at all the special rules, you know, especially Chankov. Chankov is hilarious, because to me this sounds like Robin Credace watched Enemy at the Gates, was just like, that's boss. And that was the only special rule where it's just like, yeah, and then he can shoot the conscripts, and then you just send in more conscripts. Oh my God, it's amazing.
Yeah, pretty much, right?
but I mean, like, yeah, that's exactly the thing, is I think there's lots of cases in the 40K universe and even in, you know, to a lesser extent, fantasy. Because I mean, in fantasy, they never really play up where it's just like, and then this one guy killed like a whole empire by himself because, you know, he's a boss.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Well, I mean, fantasy, it's never really been the case, because the special characters in fantasy are really over the top, tons of special rules, tons of points, and they kind of fit with the fluff and all those special character things that you would expect. And I think that the other thing is the armies tend to kind of, like, outside of Empire, which is a good, you know, mirror universe version of the Imperial Guard, if you're gonna compare the two, where it's just like, it's kind of the same thing, because in the Empire book, you've got all these different countries, like, you know, Averland and Nuln and all this kind of stuff, and they've got these short little backgrounds written about them where it's just like, oh, all the best stuff from here comes from here, and all the best stuff from here comes from here, and then you get to the rules, and they're just like, oh yeah, it's just paint. You're just like, no, why? Fuck, give us something, you know? Like, make certain things specific to the fluff. Now, and I get the argument that I'm sure 100 people are going to make, which is just like, it's a war game, guys. Like, the fluff's there as an addition to the game, not the other way around. But I don't really ever, I've never seen it that way. I've always been the type of guy who looks at theme armies and looks at the books and looks at all these different things. I mean, shit, who didn't read the Eisenhorn series and thought to themselves, like, I'm going to go play an all Inquisitor demon hunter list and fucking radicals, right? And take a demon host and take all these different things because of the fact that the fluff was so fucking good. And demon hosts are another one right now where it's just like, oh yeah, in the book, they're fucking amazing. In this, yeah, they're just guardsmen. You're just no.
We already had a stupidity check on.
Oh, I know, man.
Getting the Nerf bats, but no, you're absolutely right. It's one of those things where it's just like, you know, to me, the fluff is the reason that the game has endured as long as it has. Because I mean, fuck, there are other tabletop games. There are even video games. There's all of this competition for our time and effort. But to me, fuck, the Warhammer universes are so good that you want to be involved in them. Like, that's like the retention bonus. So for me, it's always one of those things where it's just like, yeah, you know what? Every time I read a God's Ghost book, I'm always writing up Imperial Guard lists because the fluff is that amazing. Oh, next month, new God's Ghosts.
Yeah, I know, right? It's been a long time.
But anyway.
We'll do our God's Ghost episode as a bonus episode. We won't go into that right now because we don't want to give away too many spoilers.
Yes, there would be tons and tons of spoilers.
But what we're seeing right now in these armies is we're seeing the fluff watered down to just this kind of cold, methodical stats breakdown for these units, right? Like, even if you look at the Pariahs and the Necrons, right? Or even the Necrons as a whole, where it's these massive hordes of, you know, undead robots that just come back to life, and it's so crazy and it's so awesome, and all of their abilities, and then, like, you know,
they just randomly appear, they kill some shit, and they disappear.
Right, right. And even the Catan.
Just deploy on the board.
And, yeah, right, right. Oh, they just appeared on the other side of the board edge, and then they marched up. Yeah, it's stuff like that, right? And especially like the Catan or another one of them, where on the table, it's just kind of pointless. It's just like a big, sucky, monstrous creature that can't stand up to like a Carnifex. It's just like, this thing should be end-all, be-all of models you put on the table. I don't care if it costs 800 points. It should rip it a game.
Yeah,
it should rip a Baneblade in half.
It's a fucking god.
Right.
Like, literally, it is the captured living embodiment of a, well, not necessarily like a god, but it's just like, for all intents and purposes, the power it wields is godlike to all right. other creatures. So it's just like, on a battlefield, it shouldn't really, like, they are so good, they really shouldn't even be represented in the game. It would be like a Primarch, where it's just like, hey, do you see this? Logan Grimm or Lehman Russ is my fucking. I know. You know, it's because you said it at the last episode. You're like, Logan Grimnar! And it just stuck with me. I'm like, Lang, silly.
I was trying to get Terry to be like, yeah, that's it.
But it's just like, Lehman Russ, my 2,500 point army is this guy.
Right, exactly. Why?
Because he's a boss. Like, straight up. But, you know.
But Necrons are a good example of that, where, you know, they talk about the prize and they talk about the immortals and they talk about, you know, the
dude, they talk about spiders. Their number is legion, and it's just like, but at 18 points each, you ain't fucking legion.
It ain't even remotely legion.
All 30 of us are legion.
Space Marines outnumber us, eh? Yeah, we're the legion over here. Good job. And they talk about their weapons and they talk about all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, there were some places where they did bring the fluff into line with the rules, which was kind of like, the way that their weapons used to work against tanks and monstrous creatures and things of that nature.
You mean how their weapons used to be able to blow up tanks?
Yeah, pretty much. And now, again, like, and this is kind of my point with this whole conversation that we're going to, like, this whole topic for the show is basically, like, all we're seeing is just this watered-down version of the fluff in the rules now, where it's just like, oh, so what's the difference between an immortal and a warrior? He's a little tougher. He's got a bigger gun. You're just like, so all this fluff and all this blah, blah, blah about how they're the, you know, the better of the, you know, the Necrons. And I think the Necron book has some of the best fluff out there right now. But it's just, you know, like, none of it gets utilized.
Any ancient race has phenomenal fluff. So the Eldar and Dark Eldar both have brilliant fluff. The Necrons do because, you know, at the end of the day, those were, you know, these were the warring armies, you know, the ones created by the old ones, and, you know, so that's always very, very interesting for them. But you're absolutely right. They have this wicked fluff where they talk about this huge backstory and all this. But you know, you're right. Nowadays in new codexes, we have one of two things happening with fluff. You either have the sort of very almost mathematical approach where it's just like, we have this one unit, therefore we need a story that stars that unit.
Yeah.
It's
a cold approach. Like, it's just an uninspired approach. It's a
cold approach. And that's what you see in things like the Space Wolves book, the fucking Guard book. No, because then you get to the other one, which is the Matt Ward, like, tie it to the radiator and rape it version of the fluff. We're basically Matt Ward phones in all of his fluff and it's all stupid because he tries to crank it to 11. Because this is the guy that says that, you know, Grey Knights would totally murder the shit out of sisters and bathe in their blood to gain entrance to a demon castle.
Right.
To kill a demon. Because they're totally okay like that. We're so pure. We'll murder the shit out of loyal.
Yeah, we'll even partner with Necrons.
Yeah, those are the Blood Angels. The Blood Angels are the ones giving the double Dutch rudder to the Necrons. Oh,
God. Well, yeah, I think, you know, like, hilarious thing about Matt Ward's fluff is it's like Axe Cop, where it's just like, and then he turns into a dinosaur, but he's a dinosaur with chainsaw hands. And the chainsaws have machine guns on them. And you're just like, okay, thanks, Matt. And then the chainsaws shoot lasers out of the saw blades. Okay, Matt, okay, just turn it down. And then you realize that he's 8. And I think that's – but, like, yeah, I think that you're right. I think that you do get into the situations where the fluff just gets so overblown, where they're just turning it up so far that it just takes this massive departure from the canon of the game. I think it's really interesting when you start talking about kind of the canon of the game and the fiction that kind of goes in along with it, because you know, anytime a new codex comes out, they keep adding to the canon. And we've bitched about this before, and we were bitching about Space Marines and the whole idea where they're just like, oh, and Space Wolves. Oh, yeah, they've always ridden Cyber Wolves everywhere. They've always had them. Well, yeah, we know you've never seen them before.
And they're giant pet wolves.
Yes, trust me, they've always had them. And then, of course, it just changes the dynamic of that army, you know, whereas Blood Angels at one point used to be like, oh, yeah, yeah, you kind of get the idea that maybe they're almost like space vampires. And then, like, every new edition of the book, it's just like, oh, no, they sparkle. They're all over. It's just gems, just blood gems everywhere. And it just keeps going over the top.
I think Blood Angels are actually a really great example, because back in, you know, I'm not going to speak to second edition. I didn't play. But back in third edition, Blood Angels were, you know, it's just like, no, we follow the Codex Astartes, you know, we're Marines, but we have this dark secret, and that is the Red Thirst. So it was one of those things where it's just like, as a result, this is my book. I've got this one special unit called Death Company. I use chaplains like a boss, and I've got a special rule that says that I have to test to see if any units suffer from this Red Thirst.
Right.
My Death Company is randomly generated, because if one guy out of every squad just fucking loses it, he joins the Death Company before the battle.
Yeah.
And that was one of those unique things. Then you had the White Dwarf PDF come out where it's just like, no, Blood Angels have always been about, like, super fast assaults. Why do you think jump packs are troops? And you're just like, but they never were before. Ever. Yeah. You know, and then, yeah, now they just jumped onto the whole fucking Twilight craze, where it's just like, we're all misunderstood vampires that stalk teenage girls. That's just what we all do. It's
just part of our life. It's part of our daily life.
I mean, Sanguinius did it.
So, I agree.
Sanguinius Cullen. I mean, everyone was his last name.
Oh, that's Mephiston. But, I think we do see these polar opposites in terms of the books. And, yeah, I mean, you can attribute it to the writers of these books. But I think that that's what's very strange, is it's like, I think when Matt Ward is doing the fluff for the book, you know, like, he gets those ideas and then he just tries to make the rules match that in his mind of, like, it's so awesome. Like, if I just make this so awesome, it'll be so awesome, because this guy needs to be so fucking awesome. Awesome.
Really? Like, you don't think he phones in his fluff? Because I mean,
I think he's like a child. I think this guy has to be badass. He has to be toughness 6, strength 6. He has to go to the fucking warp.
Oh,
he has to
live there. A guy that's weapon skill 7? Well, mine's weapon skill 8.
Yes. Yes. I don't know if it's just one-upsmanship, but like, it's very clear that I think you've said it before, it's just like he gets really excited about certain units and he just has to try to make them ridiculous, and everything else does kind of fall apart. Where, yeah, I do agree that in a lot of other cases he is kind of phoning in the fluff, but with regards to the Blood Angels, it's just like the fluff is there, but the fluff is like, it's the kids book fluff, you know? It's like, you don't want to read it. It makes you like it less. So you talk to people who play Blood Angels and it's just like, half of them haven't even read the fluff because they started and then they just quit. It was like me for the Grey Knights. I started reading it and I just stopped because it was ruining that army for me.
Go see. I had heard from internet rumors what the fluff for Drygo was, you know, Chapter Master.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was just like, oh shit. I don't want to even, like, if I stop on those pages, like, I just have to flip through. Like, I start at the back whenever I open the Grey Knights book, so I don't even have to go through the fluff, because I knew it was bad. When you're just like, well, you see, the guy in charge of organizing and deploying our entire chapter just wanders around the warp and randomly shows up on a battlefield. That's all right. You know, he can totally organize from there. He just calls us. We've got a pager. You know, when we need him, we shine a light in the sky with a, you know, and he comes. And
why do they shine a light? They've got psychic everything. Just a psychic signal. Everybody's psychic. Oh my God. All right. So let's kind of get into some of the other armies here.
So when is it going to be about my Tyranids?
I figured we'd just wait so then you can blow up at the end of it, because, I was going to
We can talk about something else.
Let's talk about Eldar.
Okay, Eldar's great. Eldar's a good example. I think
Eldar is a very good example because, like you said before, their fluff is really, really entertaining, but their units just don't fit the bill. You know, there are a few where you're kind of like, all right, yeah, sure, I see this. This works. I'm all for it. But there's a lot of units where the fluff is so awesome, and then you look at the rules and you're just like, this is terrible.
Shining Spears.
Shining Spears and Warp Spiders. Oh, dear Lord. They just, it's just...
You want to love them.
I think everybody who's ever played an Eldar army wants to love them because they all look at that box going like, that's such a great idea. Oh my God, look at those rules. Oh my God, how are they so much, how are they so expensive? Jesus.
280 points for 5 jet bike riders? Worth it. I mean, they're toughness 3, dude. Look at that. Or toughness 4, plus 1 for mounted.
But like, yeah, in the story, they're great. They're very much kind of like the Kazurkin in the fluff where it's just like, oh, they're the like cream of the crop. Like you only need 3 because 3 just wrecks everybody. And oh man, like it just, I think the freaking Eldar avatar, whatever he's called, an avatar, right?
Yeah.
The avatar is another one of those where you kind of look at the fluff and he's supposed to be this giant god stalking across the battlefield, just ruining people. And
I don't know. Like, Matt Ward's fluff kills one of him every book, so I don't know if the avatar is that good.
He just shows up, somebody kills him. Oh, well, we'll get a new one. But like, he doesn't even stack up to a greater daemon, and originally in the fluff, he was supposed to essentially be a greater demon.
Yes.
Like he was supposed to be a demon. He was supposed to be this big, massive monster, and it's just like, oh, yeah, he can't even stand up to a demon prince. Like, he's
the fluff, pathetic. He is a monster. You have an aspect warrior, usually a striking scorpion, because they're the most aligned to Cain, who they literally prep and anoint, and then is eventually possessed by the avatar of Cain. So it's just like, it legitimately is a fucking greater demon for the Eldar, which is pimp in terms of ideas. But then, yeah, you look at the rules, and he's like, oh, weapon skill 10, that's cool. And then But I mean, we've talked about in the past how shitty monstrous creatures are now, and I think he just kind of suffers from...
Yeah, that falls right on top of it.
Yeah,
especially when you can trade it for a freaking monstrous creature like the
Wraith Lord.
Wraith Lord, yeah, the Wraith Lord.
Yeah, the Wraith Lord's like 80 points cheaper.
Wraithguard, that's another good example.
I don't know. I love Wraithguard rules. I think they're boss.
I think they're hilarious.
I just wish they had more than 2 poses, which are basically the same pose, but with a slightly...
Like asking when we're eventually going to get our hands on new Striking Scorpion and Warp Spider models. Or that modern.
Striking Scorpions got redone with the last Eldar book, and they're pretty awesome. Because them Banshees and Fire Dragons and Dark Reapers all got redone, but poor Warp Spiders and...
I was thinking of one other one, which, all right, well, I'm thinking of Swooping Hawks then.
See, Swooping Hawk fluff is amazing, where they're awesome. And then they have las guns, and you're just like, yay?
I think that's the funny thing about Swooping Hawks, is it's just like, but can I just take a shuriken catapult? No, gotta take a las gun. Just like, fuck, why? Because that's what they have. And the funny thing is that, like, that doesn't even fit the fluff. It's just they just gave them las guns. Yeah. And I get that that's like a carryover from like the old, just the old codex, but you kind of look at the unit now and you're just like, but why? Why is this happening? Like, can't you at least change them to hell guns? Like, just make them something worthwhile?
You know, and the worst part about the Eldar being this sort of like laughable version of their fluff is when you compare that to the Dark Eldar that just came out, the Dark Eldar and their fluff line up so well. Like, it's just like you read this and then you look at the rules and you're just like, that fits. Everything works. The points got, like, there really is no choice in that book where you're just like, and they missed the boat completely, except maybe Mandrakes.
I was like, wait a second, you're forgetting about Mandrakes.
Yeah, you know what I said? I was saying it. I was like, because really, Mandrakes are the exception to that rule, because Mandrakes are the only unit that you look at and you have to say why after you read their really awesome fluff.
That was a missed boat there.
Yes, it was. And the worst part is if you just drop them like fucking 5 points per model and gave them their shooting attack base, they would be amazing.
Yep.
But if only.
At least they don't look like gay pirates anymore.
Well, the at least the grotesques don't look like Down syndrome kids that need to ride a storm raven to school every day.
I like the Down syndrome grotesques. I make no apologies. I like those old grotesques. I thought they were just hilarious. Especially when you decided that you wanted to make an army of them. Just like, yes, we should totally do this. And then the whole idea was to just take like a box of zombies and a box of Dark Eldar warriors and just start like swapping bits and pieces.
The worst part is grotesques in that old book had brilliant... I mean, they still have great rules, but I mean, back then they were amazing rules. I'm immune to all shooting that doesn't instant kill me. Yes. And if I'm ever on the winning end of a combat, you just run away. It doesn't matter what your leadership or stubborn or...
Yeah.
You just run. Like, it was just... They were such a good unit, and I always buddied them with my Archon, because I'm like, my Archon can single-handedly win a combat. And then the grotesques break the unit.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, yeah, and they would still get ripped to pieces by, like, Eldar with star cannons or multi-lasers or, like, anything else on the table that was strength 6. Like, a good ordnance template would just wreck that entire unit. Because they were still only toughness 3, weren't they? With no save?
Yeah, they were toughness 3 with zero armor save at all, but they were immune to all shooting that didn't instant kill them. So it's just like, oh, you can't double tap your bolters.
Yeah, otherwise they had 2 wounds in combat, which was also freaking fantastic.
Yeah, so it's just like they were such a good unit with such fucking Down syndrome retard models. It was fucking terrible. I hated them. Like, I used a unit in my Dark Eldar army, but I used Mangle's Manhide Manflayers as my grotesques because they are sweet models.
They're pretty good. All right, so I think another one of the armies that's really strange in terms of the way that it plays versus the fluff is orcs. Because orcs, I think that they play better than the fluff is kind of written for them, because the fluff always writes them as just being like unbelievably stupid and kind of ineffectual, whereas you kind of read the fluff for them and the fluff is always just like, a Jedi bought that with a hammer and he fell down, and you're just like, okay, this isn't really psyching me up for this book. Which is very different from like the fluff for Orcs and Goblins for fantasy, which actually is kind of the opposite, where they do play them with this kind of crushing over-the-top thing. And there's a couple of jokes thrown in there. But for 40K, Orcs always kind of get the short end of the stick on fluff, because even when they win, it's like it's an accident, or it was such a lopsided fight, it was ridiculous.
You're totally right. And the funny thing is like it feels like in 40K they think that the balancing out, where it's just like, haha, orcs are so unreliable, they're ballistic skill 2. And you're like, that's it? Really? That's that is the extent of my unreliability?
You don't even have animosity like in fantasy.
Well, exactly. I mean, fuck. So it's just like, yeah, okay. No, I think you're right. I do think that the rules completely outshine the fluff in the case of orcs.
Yep, because like Mega Knobs, the Dreadnoughts especially, like Killikans, like all this kind of stuff. Like every time you read the fluff form, it's just like, and then they shamble forward and they shoot, but it doesn't hit anything. And then, you know, they kind of fall over and then they kill that. They eventually kill the tank. And you're just like, that's, again, it's not psyching me up. It's really not psyching me up for this thing. So I kind of look at it shaking my head going like, this just is not, this is not the way that it should be. And I feel bad for my orc army kind of in that respect, because I love the models. I think that there's gorgeous stuff in there. They have some very, very cool rules that make the army very interesting to play. But the rules aren't really part of the fluff. They're just kind of the rules, right? And all the fluff that goes in with those rules is all very flat and very like...
Then there's this big wah.
Yeah,
and then their stuff didn't work. And so the mad doc took the wounded orc and he just cobbled them together, and it's crazy.
Oh, it's the duct tape and a
Don't even know. Like you don't even know. Like, man.
Well,
you don't even know.
I think that one of the best bits of fluff for the orcs that ever came out was just that very, very weird hint of the fact that the old ones created them to be an unstoppable force. And that came in the Necron Codex, where they talked about like the hardy green-skinned Kronk. And you're just like, that's the orcs, you know.
Because, you know, you're absolutely right. That was really awesome in the Necron Codex, because the Necrons here were waging war and fucking winning. They were absolutely winning. So the old ones, in like the desperate Hail Mary pass, created the orcs to be the unstoppable green wave that wants nothing but to fight ever.
Yeah.
So it's just like, wow.
You know, great. And they knew that it would eventually turn into the next great catastrophe in the galaxy. But, you know, in their infinite wisdom and confidence, they figured, we'll be able to take care of it when it gets bad. But, of course, they ended up leaving. They were gone. And then the universe is stuck with the orcs as this, like, constantly growing horde that, like, you can literally scorch a planet with nukes to the point where there is no life left on the planet and the orc spores will still populate.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this amazing bit of story that they kind of came up with. But when you actually read the Orc Codex, it's all very dull.
Yeah, because all the Orc Codex really is just like, and then this walk came and they won because they're so big. And then this happened. Right. And it's crazy. And then when you hear like the first person accounts and fluff like that, they're all soccer hooligans.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, dude, are you in your fucking like Silly Manchester humies. United? Yeah.
They were throwing bottles and the Gretchen and blah, 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 blah. And so I always hope for this kind of like, you know, give us more of what the orcs are going to be as opposed to kind of what they are, and like stop making them the butt of all the jokes, right? Where this is kind of the opposite of the Tyranids, because the Tyranids always, I figured I'll get into it before you do. The Tyranids always take themselves seriously, and they kind of have that same idea as the orcs, except for the fact that it's like, well, they come from outside of our galaxy, so you know that the Tyranids have already wiped out other galaxies. Like, they've already literally devoured entire galaxies, and now they're traveling these massive black gaps between the galaxies, and they're showing up in ours. And so it's only like a foregone conclusion before the Tyranids blow through our galaxy and keep on going. And that's kind of why they're so interesting. I've said it before, the quote that I always loved about the Tyranids that always stuck with me, and I think I read this in the second edition Tyranid Codex, which was basically like a fluff account where they were just like, if every single guardsman in every single regiment fired one shot, hit, and killed the Tyranids, it wouldn't even make a dent. And yeah. I was just like, that's amazing. I love the idea that it's just like, no. Like, there are more Tyranids than there are humans. And the humans are the dominant form of life in this galaxy. They span planets and population. And, like, that's why all of these other races keep getting beat down by the humans. It's because it's just like, humans, they spread out across the galaxy. And they've got the Imperial Guard, and they've got the Space Marines, and they got the Sisters, and they got the Inquisition. But compared to that, they barely make up like a tenth or a hundredth of the number of Tyranids that there are out there.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because the fluff for the Imperial Guard is always that it's an endless ocean. Like, it's just like there are more Imperial Guardsmen than enemies of the Imperium, because and that's the way the Imperial Guard always fights, and that's the way like the high commanders always plan it, where it's just like, no, it's a war of attrition. If a billion Guardsmen have to lose their lives for me to win, that's okay. A billion is nothing. And then, yeah, the Tyranids are bigger. And it's funny that you talk about like that sort of size, because what drew me to redo my Tyranid army, because Tyranids were my first. I moved on from them to Dark Eldar.
Right.
And it was only after my Dark Eldar army was stolen and I had no 40K armies, because I wasn't going to go bring out my old, like, first painted army again, because fuck that. I'd rather not play 40K than bring that army out. I was looking at what army I wanted to do, and what grabbed me for the Tyranids was I was going through reading my old codex, and it just talked about how it's just like, you know, the Tyranids were this sort of single organism, and they always did what it took to win. So whether that was choke you with the dead, so it's just like, I'm just going to throw worthless sconce until you're out of ammunition. And now that you're out of ammunition, now the important shit's going to come. You know, it was just like that sort of interesting thing. And that's why when I was redoing that Tyranid army, it started with 100 gaunts. Actually, initially, you know this, I wanted 160. I was going to take 5 full units of 32 gaunts, because it was the closest thing you could do to the fluff in that old book of,
right.
you know, I'm just going to throw wave upon wave, and there isn't enough game for you, you know, because if every shot you fired hit and wounded, you still don't have enough bullets in this game to kill all the gaunts that there were. And I loved it. I loved being the swarmiest of the swarm armies. And then this codex came out, and God, what the fuck happened? Like,
yeah,
you know, like it's one of those things where it's just like, I thought about trying to run the 180 fucking Termagaunt army with two Tervagaunts to spawn more. And I'm just like, so I have 300 bodies on the board that can't do shit. Like, it's just like, I can't hurt a tank.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to shoot at me. There's really no point.
Right.
You know, and that's why it's just like one of those things where it's just like, oh, fuck. But even beyond that, if you start looking at net lists for the Tyranids, and, you know, you go to tournaments and you look where it's just like, fucking nothing looks like the fluff. Like, they're like, it's literally one of those things where it's just like, even the fluff in this current Tyranid Codex talks about how they are this sort of hyper intelligent, always adapting, you know, right tools for the job at all times, and, you know, using all of its resources of choke you with their dead, and, you know, big monsters that are adaptable. You then look at this book where it's just like, so what's adaptable? Nothing.
Right.
What do you mean nothing? Well, you can buy this one upgrade for, you know, you have two upgrades now. What do you mean two upgrades? I used to be able to modify the entire stat line. Yeah, you can't do that anymore. But it, the fluff talks about how I can do that. Yeah.
Well, like, they,
like, it's just such a disappointment, you know, like, it's
they mitigate that to an extent with things like, you know, Without Number and kind of things of that nature, but yeah, it
but
gets,
they don't even have
down.
Without Number anymore, like, yeah. That was the beautiful thing about that
I
last book,
right.
Is I really think that the last book with Without Number really encapsulated the whole idea of Tyranids are Legion, where it's just like, no, I have fucking, because this is what I ran all 5th edition until the new book came out, which was 96 Termagaunts with Without Number. You know, and, you know, it was always that thing where it's just like, no, I'm going to win, because or at the very least, it's going to be a draw, because just like, even if you kill my scoring unit, they just walk right back on.
Yeah.
How do you deal with this 100 gaunts that just keep recycling? And it was just such a fun, unique play style. And then, you know, again, you look at this codex, and this codex just kind of falls flat because it doesn't encapsulate any of the fluff. It doesn't encapsulate any of the feeling of the army. And you're just like, like I was talking to Terry today while we were out and I was getting sunburned like fucking crazy. We spent the day in the sun. It was glorious. But I was just saying, I'm just like, you know, I don't think I'll ever, I will not play another game of 40K until 6th edition comes out. And when it does, I'm just going to look at the edition, look at the kind of army that I want to play, because it won't be my Tyranids, and we'll go from there. And that's what has me excited for 40K is not playing my Tyranid army. And I really think that that's a fucking failure of the fluff, because the fluff was the reason I built that army.
Yeah, really. No, and I think that in that case, I think that really comes down to a situation of kind of the fluff not evolving, or I don't know. Okay, how am I going to put this? This really comes down to the rules evolving in such a way that they're moving away from the fluff. Because, yeah, there was a time where they did kind of meet that that fluff side of it, especially with the Tyranids. And as the rules kind of evolved and they kept adding more stuff and they kept changing stuff, it just slowly kind of moved away from the fluff. I think one of the only armies that we run into that doesn't really have this problem too much is just your general kind of vanilla Marines. They tend to kind of fit the fluff very well. And their stats do, but again, you know, you've got a very expensive army with expensive units, kind of cream of the crop type stuff. So all of their fluff kind of being cream of the crop usually works. It's just that the only funny thing with the Space Marines is that term movie Marines, where in the fluff, it's just like, and then 10 Marines go in against an entire legion of orcs. And it was a terrible battle. It was so bloody. 3 of them died. Because what was it? There was a Space Wolf book where It was like these, it was a suicide mission, and there was only six of them. And they went through all of this suicide mission. It was just like, yeah, two died. Just like, so that wasn't really much of a suicide mission, really. I mean, if it's just two of you dying, like, oh, yeah, it's terrible. But
God, more of you dropped in that Ultramarines movie bullshit.
Yeah, right, hey?
Actually, what, like 1,000 Imperial fists? Like, it was laughable.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, you know, and I think that's another thing is the Marine Army in general, because they always talk about where it's just like, no, we just sent 10. They pacified a whole planet. It's all you need. Because, yeah, movie Marines is the only thing that ever really encapsulated what Space Marines, you know, if the fluff was represented, should be. But, you know, fuck, in the fluff, they're superhuman.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like when you read like... you know, I don't read a lot of Marine, you know, Black Library stuff, but when you're reading the Horus Heresy, it's just like, and then we were pacifying this planet, and it's just like, hey, you know, sure, they have guns. Every now and then it'd find a chink in the armor, but as soon as we got into them, into the melee, they couldn't hurt us at all.
Right, yeah.
I punched like him in the screen, my fist came out his back, and you're just like, yay!
Strength 4 versus Toughness 3.
Yeah, you know, and it's things like that, where it's just like, in the fluff, humans, regular humans, simply cannot harm Astartes. It's just, it's not even possible, and Astartes are so superhuman. So, really, I guess the moral of all of this is... the fluff for 40K is absolutely brilliant. It's fantastic. It's top notch. And absolutely no army in existence is really able to capture that feeling.
Yeah.
Is that what we can say?
I think we can say that for sure. and I...
Because even the Tau, when the Tau always talk about... you know, I think the Tau are a good one, because in the Tau...
They are a good one, yeah.
They talk about how the Tau are so good, like they're the greatest strategists in the galaxy, because they can examine any situation and they can react faster than anyone else. And that's why they were able to go from fucking nothing to having a empire that's starting to expand. And then you look at the book, you know, and then when you look at the rules, you're like, so by, you know, approach any situation and adapt, you mean I can have a strength 5 gun that rapid fires? Or a strength 5 gun that pins.
Yeah.
Go adaptation. Like, that's... These are my options? Like, it's just like, you know, the Tau fight, and they rapidly deploy, and they're fast, and they're, you know, they're this, and they're that. You're just like, so why do I have two options?
Yeah, right.
Static gun line or semi-mobile gun line?
Yeah. And that again is one of those weird things, because they also talk about the Tau Empire, including all these different races, and then it's just like, and you get the Kroot.
Oh, don't forget Vespids, Lang. I know you've never seen them on the board ever. Terry uses her painted Vespids because she loved the models, so she painted them up, and I think she went to like 2 tournaments with them before even she was just like, they're shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So now they're her objective counters.
Yeah, I know. No, but that's exactly it, right? Like, they eventually added Vespids, but I think that the Tau suffer from this thing where they'd written the original fluff, and the original fluff was good, and the original fluff kind of fit the original army, but it was all very new, and it was all very understandable that they kind of needed some changes, and everybody knew that they needed some changes in the rules. But then they said, oh, they've got all these different races, but hey, Kroot, here's Kroot. And then when they talked about the next book, they kind of talked about like, oh, they're going to add more races and we're going to get all this stuff. And like, they didn't even add the Imperial conscripts into the army book.
Which were in existing
chapter. Oh, they were so good in chapter approved. They were so fun.
Yeah.
And the conversions were badass.
Well, yeah, the conversions were great, but really, at the end of the day, they were guardsman stats at guardsman points with the option to upgrade to Tau guns, which was pimp. Or and Tau grenades, and you're just like, why didn't this make it? Yep. Like, seriously, why?
But then when the new book came out, it became very clear that the Tau were just like, oh yeah, hey, and then we can make this new vehicle. And like, that was kind of their idea behind it, was just like, no, we'll just make more stuff. Just more Tau stuff. Like, everyone loves Gundam, right? Nobody buys Kroot, so they just like stopped making it, and it turned into a situation where You know, you play the Tau army and you look at the fluff and it's just like, you know, the way that this army plays, you would expect the fluff to just read like, oh, it's just Tau. Like, oh, everything's just Tau. Just yeah. Tau. But that's not the case because you just don't have the options to. And we've talked about this before where they do have the, they're talking about doing the whole mixes and kind of alternating force organization chart. I think it would be great. It'll never happen. I maintain that it will never happen.
I agree. I think it's too much of a risk, and Games Workshop is averse to risk with Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah.
But you know, you're absolutely right, where it's just like, no, the Tower and Empire. It's just like, you know, it's like a gay pride parade of people that come together and say, you know, we're here and we're queer and we're going to shoot you in the face. Like, that's always been the fluff for the Tau Empire. And then, yeah, you read the book and you're just like, so all the good choices are Tau, and Crude are all right.
Yeah.
We'll take some Crude. Crude are decent. They're not great, but they're decent. And the other non-Tau choice, it's crap. I'm not even gonna look at it. I'm just gonna take those new vehicles.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly it. All right. Well, we haven't gone into every single army, but we are getting to the end of the show here. Yeah, I'm that's part of the reason why I'm losing the love for 40K is it's just like it's departing so much from the fluff, or the fluff is getting so over the top that you can't just enjoy an army anymore the way that you used to. It's either it's over the top fluff, or the fluff is so muted and the rules are so flat. I mean, I don't think there's an army out there. I mean, Dark Eldar you might be able to make the argument for, but I don't think that there's really an army out there that its fluff is as exciting as its rules.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you're always going to kind of run into a situation where you're just going to be stuck in one way or another. Well, let's get on to the stupidity check for this week. Nathan, I believe it is your turn.
Yes, indeed. All right. So, honestly, it was looking like it was going to be a tough week to find one. And then, of all places, Blood of Kittens, previous Stupidity Check host site, they came and they delivered. So Abuse Puppy is a prolific – I love the name, by the way. If yep. you do happen to listen, which I doubt, I love the name. He's a very prolific poster on all sorts of sites, whether it's Warseer, Belvossels, Blood of Kittens, or even his own blog. He posted an article, and usually I really enjoy them. I always, whenever I see that Abuse Puppy had a new article, I always take the time to read it, except this one. You know, he posted an article where he basically broke down every last mission from the Battle Missions book. Whether it was good, bad, or meh, you know, kind of in the middle. But where the stupidity check really comes in is the beginning of the article, when he's really kind of trying to set it up. Because basically what he says is, he's just like, yeah, you know what, I've noticed. It's just like, we're really far into 5th edition, and the only really good scenarios are the rulebook scenarios. And any tournament organizer that tries to write their own scenarios is fucking it up. Like, it's just like, you know, he straight up says, don't write your own scenarios because you change the meta, or if you're going to write your own scenarios, don't change deployment zones and don't add any random elements because that fucks it up and makes, you know, and changes the metagame. And I kind of had to stop and think about it, because I was just like, wait, so you're saying that tournaments should be Vets Nights with prizes? I should show up, I should roll up my rulebook scenario, I should play, and then at the end I'll get a Storm Raven out of it, because yes, I won, and that's all that matters. And that's what, like I said, I just had to shake my head at it, because, you know, the best tournaments I've ever been to have fucking non-standard scenarios, like, straight up, where it's just, I play the rulebook scenarios in and out at Vets Nights, or when I'm prepping, or what have you. And his entire premise for going through the Battle Missions book was trying to find other missions that weren't from the rulebook that would be good for tournament play, because tournament organizers don't know what they're doing and they just kind of fuck it up when they're making their own scenarios. And I'm just like,
obviously.
what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, I couldn't believe it. And I really think that it's indicative of where how 40K players think nowadays, where it's just like, no, there should be no random elements in my dice game. I should be able to build my list, know that it will beat your list, look at the scenario and say, okay, I have to move 3 units on turn 5. And I win the game. And end of discussion. That's all it should be, is it should be a dice rolling exercise where I know I'm going to win and this feeds my ego. And that's why it's just a failed stupidity check for me. Because, I mean, like I said, I love non-standard scenarios. I love scenarios that fuck with me as hard as they fuck with my opponent, because that means that I have to think on my feet. I've never seen this before. Like, when I roll up a fucking capture and control or secure and hold, I know exactly how I'm going to play the game because I've played those missions hundreds of times.
Right.
You know, so it's just like...
It was like recon back in the day. It's like, oh, look, we rolled up recon. Well, I know exactly how to win this
cleanse
game.
Cleanse back in the day.
Yeah, cleanse.
I rolled a 1, cleanse. Do you just want to shake hands and say I win? Because
yeah, exactly.
You're static. You're a gun line. I'm going to win this scenario.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. No, I agree with you. I think, honestly, you hit the nail on the head when you said that it comes down to just having to deal with things that you're not used to dealing with. And I understand when people are going to argue the fact that they say, like, oh, the rules aren't written as well as they should be, or, you know, hey, maybe this isn't as fair as it needs to be. My army's not going to be as good as it needs to be in this scenario. But, you know, you should be able to deal with a little bit of change, like a little bit of imbalance, as it were. And honestly, for every scenario that you're going to run into where it's unbalanced for your army, the next one you're going to play is a little bit more balanced for your army. If you're the guy who has to win every game, yeah, that's got to suck. But, you know, I don't really see this argument of the only best scenarios are the rulebook scenarios. I think that it's cool to play with the rulebook scenarios. Like, yeah, toss them in there. But just a little bit of a change of pace is never a bad thing, especially in Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah, you know, because, you know, that's the thing is even when you look at the Warhammer 40,000 rulebook scenarios, you have the same 3 boring deployment zones. And I know a lot of people hate Dawn of War because Dawn of War really fucks with you, you know, and then you have the same 3 boring victory conditions. I mean, at least fantasy out of its 6 scenarios, victory conditions are kind of all over the place. You know, it'll either change your victory conditions, like Blood and Glory or Watchtower, or it's going to change the way your deployment works, like Dawn Attack or Meeting Engagement or Battle at the Pass, you know. And that is why, you know, I think that there's enough variation there that not only could you play rulebook scenarios, which, again, I don't like. I'd rather you think of something. But you see enough variety that, you know, when it comes time to try to write your own scenario, you can be very balanced when you use that as a starting point. But, you know, for 40K, I've run tournaments. We've written custom scenarios where it's just one of those things where it's just like, if you are going to implement a game mechanic as a tournament organizer, I just make sure that the knife cuts both ways. So if I'm going to penalize shooting, I have to penalize assault.
Yeah.
In the same stroke. So that's all you have to do. And all of a sudden, look, it's a new scenario. It has a random game mechanic and it is fair in its application of, you know, does this negatively impact shooting? Yes. Well, at the same time, it's going to negatively impact movement, which is going to hurt assault armies.
Right.
There we go. Problem solved. But apparently, that's bullshit because my math-hammered list is not able to look at your custom scenario that changes my deployment because I there's no pre-measuring, but that's okay because I've memorized the size of the realm of battle boards and I know how to deploy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like your custom deployment zones and your special rules are bullshit because my completely optimized math-hammered list can't get an auto win. Bullshit. You should never do that, tournament organizer. Shame on you.
Well, and if you really do run into a scenario where you really feel it's incredibly imbalanced, like, you know, play it, be a good sport, and let the tournament organizer know after the fact. Like, hey, I found that this one was a little bit over the top. Maybe you might want to think about doing this instead. But, I mean, anybody who just looks at this and says, we got to play everything a pitched battle. You know, we got to play nothing but the scenarios I know how to win on, you know?
We are talking to you, Australia.
Yeah, exactly. ETC.
Yes. No, but I mean, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I played at Warhammered, 4 weeks ago ish, it was that tournament when we were doing our Storm of Magic one. But honestly, one of the funnest tournaments I've ever been to, ever. And it had custom scenarios for every single mission. And after playing, you know, five games, five different missions, you know, I sent feedback and I said, you know what, four of these were absolutely great. I fucking loved them. I thought the these two in particular were brilliant. These are the reasons why. But this one here, even though I won off of the scenario, I think is, you know, unfair. And these are my reasons. And I sent it to an email. You know, I wasn't going to post on our blog or fucking on the forum so everyone can see me being, I don't know, sore for not winning the tournament or what have you. But it was just one of those things where I was just like, you know what? No. Here's some honest feedback that I felt about the scenario. I'm the only person and everyone else loved it, fucking ignore me. That's great. You know, because it you know, it's not like it was an issue of you penalize demons. Therefore, you know, as a demon player, I couldn't win. It was just one of those things where the scenario was very random. Mm. I was nearly tabled and got a win. That's why I was just like, you know, fuck, like, yeah, I'm happy I won. Great. It's a tournament. I got a win. I shouldn't have gotten the win.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you should look at that, you know. But that's exactly the thing is even if you do custom scenarios, send your feedback. If you do think that this is bullshit, you can't win, play the scenario. You might win, which could change your mind. And if you don't win, then you can send your feedback after the fact and they can improve. Because at the end of the day, I've tournament organized. I can honestly say that it's just like you start off with enough time and you end with not enough time. So, you know, yeah, your last three scenarios, they might not be as good as your first three because you were fucking rushed for time.
Mm-hmm.
And what have you. So any feedback is good because it's going to allow you as a tournament organizer to improve for the next year. And that's really all you can say is, you know, if people have issues and I'm able to look at those issues and address them for the next year, my event's going to keep getting better and better.
Yeah, well, there you go. Keep trying new stuff and don't be afraid.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but that's bullshit because my math hammered list doesn't win when you bullshit.
That's Jaded Gamercaster this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers. Although I was thinking chow because you laughed a lot at that last week.
I just thought it was very clever. I don't know if she meant to be clever.
Terry says chow all the time.
I know, like, she says chow all the time, but like you say cheers, she says chow, she's Asian. That's funny stuff. You can go on the road with that shit.
All right, Jaded Gamercast.
Goodbye.